Hello and welcome to The Music and the Movies, a program that looks at and listens to the sweet spot where music and movies intersect. In this hour, we ponder the special alchemy that happens when sound meets image, where music lovers and cinephiles come together. We explore a different theme in each episode, arranged around an idea or a person, and we delve into why some of our favorite movie moments are also musical ones. My name is Robert Horton. I'm a movie critic and historian and a member of the National Society of Film Critics. I'll play some music and talk about it in an attempt to get to the bottom of a lifelong fascination with why film is so especially intoxicating when music is involved. And at the end of each show, I'll round things off with the trailer, a particular cut that either didn't fit into the overall flow or has some special meaning to me or just so weird it deserves its own spot. So join us, won't you, for The Music and the Movies. Today's episode, Experiments in Space. Around the time the idea of a space age began to be a thing, the movies got into the game, and a lot of science fiction or even, you know, sort of quasi-science fact films got produced, gearing up especially after 1950 or so. And what we're going to listen to today is the way that the music for these movies expressed the idea that something entirely new was needed, a music of the space age, music of the future. We're going to home in on films that use space age music. It doesn't resemble the regular big orchestral sound of most movies, and is at times experimental and even avant-garde. These space age movies gave composers a license to go far out, to dabble in the kinds of strangeness that you maybe couldn't get away with in a reality-based picture. We will listen to these experiments in space, and we're going to sort of shy away from the other space operas that used more traditional scores. So, there's no Star Wars today, no Close Encounters. Oh, we might sneak in a pure orchestral track, just because I have an idea of one that's pretty far out on its own terms. And then for the trailer at the end of the show, please do not miss this. I've got a vocal performance that must be heard to be believed. Some people measure the historic space age from the launch of Sputnik in 1957, but we're going to get going before that in movie time. For instance, the movie Destination Moon, released in 1950, presented a sober and very seriously intended look at how a rocket might travel to the moon. As it happens, that score is fairly conventional, but a couple of 1951 films about flying saucers. This was a reaction to the UFO craze that had kicked off with a mysterious sighting near Mount Rainier in 1947, made it clear that music could kick off its own space age. For instance, consider the job of the old-school composer Dmitri Tiomkin, a gentleman who'd been composing music for decades at this point, just a year shy of composing the High Noon score. And here he was tasked to create the hint of the otherworldly visitor in The Thing from Another World, the splendid Howard Hawks production about a creature among us. Tiomkin's solution was to derange the orchestra and throw in that wonderful electronic instrument, the theremin, as you will hear in this excerpt.
Yeah.
a cue called Flying Saucers Sequence Part 1. What else would it be called? Something's buried in the ice out there. Composed by Dmitry Tiomkin from Howard Hawks' terrific early UFO picture, The Thing from Another World. You know, we've mentioned that electronic instrument, the theremin, a few times on this show. We never quite stopped to define it, so let's note that it was invented in the 1920s by the Russian-born Leon Theremin, who used two metal antenna-like rods sort of placed at a right angle between which the thereminist moves his or her hands, thus creating that distinctive electronic sound. There's a fantastic documentary. It's called Theremin, An Electronic Odyssey from the 90s that tells you everything you need to know about this oddball instrument. A couple of months after The Thing came out, the great composer Bernard Herrmann opted for the theremin for his score to The Day the Earth Stood Still, another film about extraterrestrial visitors, although in this case they came in peace. Here are three brief cues from Herrmann's ingenious soundtrack for that film, which give a strong sense that something in the movie composing universe has changed. Those three short musical cues are called Gort. That's the name of the robot, of course. Escape and 1230. Those are some different views of Bernard Herrmann's score from The Day the Earth Stood Still. As you heard, those two 1951 films we just talked about primarily used an orchestra for their music with a theremin thrown in. But when we get to Forbidden Planet, all of that goes out the window, and we are really experimenting. For this 1956 sci-fi classic, set on a mysterious planet, really a free adaptation of Shakespeare's The Tempest, with a little Freud thrown in, MGM tried a very cool thing. They hired a married couple, Lewis and Bebe Baron, to create the score. The Barons had made a name for themselves by creating kind of avant-garde sound pieces with tape recorders, even working with people like John Cage in the early 1950s. Here's the opening titles from Forbidden Planet, and as you'll hear, even the lion's roar, accompanying the MGM logo at the beginning, seems to have been taken over by the Baron's strange electronic noises.
Thank you.
That is the main title music from Forbidden Planet, by reputation the first movie to have an all-electronic score, created by a married couple, Lewis and Bibi Baron. It's funny, they couldn't be credited with having composed the music for the film because they weren't members of the Musicians Union, there being some debate about whether what they created was music at all. So the credit on the film, if you watch it now, it says Electronic Tonalities by Lewis and Bibi Baron. They did not work in movies again, despite creating this absolute one-off gem of film scoring. You're listening to The Music and the Movies. I'm Robert Horton, and we're looking at experiments in space, some far-out music associated with space-age films, which, by the way, were not limited to Hollywood, as we will hear in a cut from a 1963 space travel movie made behind the Iron Curtain. I'm a big fan of these Eastern Bloc sci-fi films. This one was mostly Czechoslovakian. It's called Ikari XB-1. I think Ikari is essentially Icarus, which has some very groovy design, seems to predict Star Trek just a bit in certain ways. The composer is Jenek Liska, who did a long roster of films in Czechoslovakia. And as you can hear, this soundtrack is, like the rest of the film, trying to imagine what the future will feel and sound like. That is space age music from the Czechoslovakian film Ikare XB-1, about a journey through the stars composed by Jenek Liska. Of course, this kind of music making did not just spread around the world on big screens, but also to the small screen. And we should take a moment to note that. And a truly era-defining TV theme tune, I think for the Outer Limits, composed by Dominic Frontier. I'm going to say a little bit about him in a minute. We're going to include it here because of the electronic action that's going on, and it lends that sense that it could be credible that something somewhere might be taking control of your television set.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
That's Dominic Frontier's opening credits music from The Outer Limits, which debuted on American television in 1963. Frontier would be a worthy subject for a biopic, it occurs to me, maybe with Nicolas Cage starring. He was a childhood musical prodigy, later a musical director at a couple of film studios, did the music for some key 60s shows like The Invaders, that was a cool one, and The Rat Patrol, did a soundtrack for Incubus, a movie that you must see. A curio starring William Shatner in which all the dialogue is in Esperanto. As I said, you must see it. And he later married the owner of the Los Angeles Rams. If you're a football fan, you will recognize the name Georgia Frontier, a very famous owner in the NFL for quite a few years. And by the way, that led the composer to going to jail for scalping Super Bowl tickets and not paying tax on them. Like I said, good part for Nick Cage. There were other TV shows that got in on this electronic-sounding gambit. Think of the TV series Lost in Space. That had a theme music with lots of beeps and boops composed by a newcomer by the name of Johnny Williams, who later did all right for himself doing those Star Wars pictures and other things. And also My Favorite Martian, which, as you can hear in this excerpt, uses various intergalactic-sounding noises aided by the electro-theremin. That's the theme music from My Favorite Martian. It was composed by George Greeley, which gets its otherworldly vibe from the electro theremin, played by Paul Tanner. He was the co-inventor of the instrument. It got the sound of the theremin, but you turned knobs instead of waving your hands around. This guy, Tanner, also did an album in the 1950s, which featured this instrument. You know, this was a time when albums were getting made just to show off hi-fi systems and their capabilities. And this album is called Music for Heavenly Bodies. I'll let you imagine the cover, given the double entendre possibilities there, where he used the instrument on a bunch of standards. And I'm just getting the sense through the radio waves that you maybe would like to hear a few seconds of what that sounded like on a movie song like Over the Rainbow. Okay, yes, that's what it sounds like. I think you got it. Paul Tanner also played a similar instrument on the Beach Boys' Good Vibrations. Maybe this is sounding like another biopic for Nicolas Cage, maybe. I don't know. Okay, now let's get to a trio of films that truly constitute, I think, the meat of spacey sounds in movies. These three films were all released within 4 years of each other in the late 60s, early 70s. Jerry Goldsmith was already a leading composer in Hollywood in the late 1960s. He had studied with the great Miklos Rosa, but his own work varied widely from the romantic themes of that composer. Goldsmith was one of the moderns. He was tinkering with various kinds of non-traditional approaches in his movie music. Got the chance to do something really different with the 1968 film Planet of the Apes, a score much prized by soundtrack aficionados. Virtually the entire score is experimental in nature. You remember the movie? It starts with a space voyage as Charlton Heston and his astronaut pals explore a new world, only to find out that the apes have taken over and enslaved the humans. Goldsmith said that he used stainless steel bowls for certain things. He had French horn players blowing through the wrong ends of their mouthpieces. And he deployed other offbeat approaches. But he also said that he didn't want electronic effects. He wanted to do everything with an orchestra. As you will hear in this cue, which is called The Searchers, he got something practically avant-garde. This is music from Planet of the Apes. Music from Jerry Goldsmith's score for Planet of the Apes, the 1968 version, that is. We're going to hear more from Goldsmith later when he did embrace electronic music for a space picture. Another big sci-fi movie from 1968 that you may have heard of was Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. It has apes in it too, by the way. And the story of that film's soundtrack is something I think we have to talk about in detail at some point, but the short version is that Kubrick fell in love with the pre-existing music that he put on the film as a temporary soundtrack, rejecting an entire new score by a notable Hollywood composer, Alex North. He was a pretty big name at that time. And some of that classical music on the temp track was by the likes of Richard Strauss and Johann Strauss, traditional stuff that is, but Kubrick also used violently modern work by Gyorgy Ligeti, the Hungarian composer whose piece Requiem, among others, is used at various times in the picture, including for part of the psychedelic ride through the stars that climaxes the picture. Here is part of Requiem from 2001, A Space Odyssey. an excerpt there from Requiem, specifically a section called Kyrie, composed by Gheorghe Ligeti and used in Stanley Kubrick's towering film, 2001, A Space Odyssey. This is The Music in the Movies. I'm the host, Robert Horton, and we are talking about experiments in music for space movies. Now, at this point, these otherworldly soundscapes are telling us that these dreams of space come with a considerable amount of poetry and philosophy, so much so that, you know, nobody's entirely certain what 2001 really means. The Russian director Andrei Tarkovsky steps easily into the role of poet-philosopher, and he made a film that is something of an answer to 2001, Solaris, released in 1972, a gorgeous, enigmatic, haunting film about the inexplicable occurrences at a space station orbiting a planet that seems to be creating some kind of imaginative disturbances in the crew. The music for this film is composed by Eduard Artemyev, who creates sounds that sometimes resemble other space-age offerings, but can also put you in kind of a trance state, not unlike what the cosmonauts seem to be going through. Here's an example. The cue is called Station from Solaris. Some hypnotic and otherworldly music by Eduard Artemyev from the Andrei Tarkovsky film Solaris from 1972. That trio of films, Planet of the Apes, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and Solaris, are probably the high point of creativity in this space age of film music. And we're going to scale down off that pinnacle with music from a rather silly film, albeit a fun one. This is the 1976 movie Logan's Run, which takes place in a future world where a society inside a giant pleasure dome is populated entirely by people under 30, which might be a metaphor for what the movie business was about to become. I'm not sure. Once again, Jerry Goldsmith is on the job, this time using a kooky electronic score for scenes inside the artificial dome and orchestral music outside. Here's a bit of the artificial world, a cue called Fatal Games from Logan's Run. That is from Jerry Goldsmith's score for Logan's Run. And you can just hear that we're into the 1970s now. I don't know why, but somehow you can tell. And that also goes for our next selection. If some of these synthesized sounds in the last couple of tracks have called to mind the work of John Carpenter at times, a director who frequently writes his own scores, maybe it's fitting that we should get Carpenter himself into the game here. He got into feature directing in a significant way with his 1974 film Dark Star, an outer space opus. Has some of the cheesy energy of a student film, which I think is how it began, actually, complete with Carpenter's throbbing soundtrack. Here's some of that music from Dark Star.
Thank you.
John Carpenter's music for his film Dark Star, a movie that has kind of a handmade quality. I think it suits the extremely low-budget feel of that movie. Now, sticking to the 1970s for one more track, I want to include the exception I mentioned at the beginning of the show to all this experimental electronic kind of sound. I'll try to make the case that it belongs here. John Barry's score, the 1979 Disney live-action space epic The Black Hole, about a starship on a mission near the ultimate space void, features some fine traditional scoring of the kind you'd expect from the great composer associated with so many James Bond movies and other classics. But one of the central themes is a real humdinger. It's got this swirling, cascading pulse. Sounds like the orchestra is being pulled madly into the middle of a space cyclone or something like that. Maybe it qualifies as experimental, even in the orchestral realm. We're going to hear some of that here. This is an excerpt from a cue called Zero Gravity. Some wild John Barry music there from The Black Hole. The movie was a notorious flop back in 1979 in the wake of Star Wars, when the success of Disney's live-action projects not quite as guaranteed as it is in the present day. And you're listening in the present day to The Music and the Movies. I'm the host, Robert Horton. We're looking at experimental sounds in space-age movies. And speaking of the present day, let's here are a couple of tracks from more recent movies that I think incorporate the spirit of these space-age films, one in a parodistic way, the other rather more plaintively. It makes perfect sense that the director Tim Burton and his frequent composer Danny Elfman would conjure up some of this feeling for the goofy exercise that is Mars Attacks, their 1996 collaboration about a Martian invasion that goes over the top even by Red Planet standards, I think. As you would expect, this movie gleefully and deliberately references the kinds of movies that we've been talking about, as I think you'll hear in the main title track. From Danny Elfman there, unmistakably, I think, the main title music from Mars Attacks. And you can just imagine that Elfman must have been like a kid in a candy shop when he approached the job of doing something this retro and campy and wild. Well, looking at movies from just the last few years, I was intrigued by the soundtrack to the 2018 film First Man. It's directed by Damien Chazelle, the creator of the musical La La Land. And in some ways, this movie struck me as more interesting than La La Land, I have to say. It's about Neil Armstrong, but it dares to make Armstrong kind of a cold fish, which he possibly was in real life. Maybe the right astronaut to be the first man on the moon, but not a character made for audience affection. Ryan Gosling's performance, particularly good about not needing any sympathy. As I said in my review of the film, it's a vivid portrait of an introvert. The music, as in La La Land, is by Justin Hurwitz. And at times I think this score is really enthralling, including this piece. It's called Quarantine, which includes what I'm assuming is an actual theremin, and if not, at least a close approximation. Thank you. Music by Justin Hurwitz from First Man. Music there making a gentle call back to the movie music of the space age, which is, after all, when First Man is set. I want to squeeze in one more recent film that maybe fits into our argument here, the 2016 movie Arrival. It doesn't call back to past films or refer to them particularly, but I think Johan Johansson's music is in the spirit because it's a sci-fi epic that tries to make something really new and rather experimental sounding. As you'll hear in this track, which is called Rise, the Icelandic composer is aiming to maybe approximate something like the new language that humans and aliens are aiming for. Music by the late Icelandic composer Johan Johansson from Arrival, a sense that some new language that aliens and humans alike might be able to understand, summed up in musical terms, an experiment in sound worthy of a new space age. Well, the trailer music means we've arrived at the particularly unhinged theme song I mentioned at the beginning of the show. I hope you will agree that this one is a real gem. The same year MGM released 2001 A Space Odyssey, 1968, the studio put out another big space picture, but let's just say that time has not been as kind to this one. The Green Slime is a cheesy but undeniably cool-looking outer space opus produced in Japan. It was directed by Kinji Fukasaku, who had a significant career in Japanese film, including a series of Yakuza films in the 1970s, called Battles Without Honor or Humanity, a very, very cynical, very violent series. And he also directed the astonishing cult film Battle Royale, which has a main plot device, kids killing each other. It seems to have inspired the Hunger Games. Capping off this crazy green slime project is the fact that the American cast is led by the former TV star of Wagon Train, Western series of the late 50s, early 60s, whose name happens to be Robert Horton. A gentlemanly actor, had kind of a parallel career to Clint Eastwood for a while, until they really went separate ways, both second bananas on TV westerns. And the movie also has this amazing theme song, sung by Richard Delvey, which we hereby unleash.
Open the door, you'll find the secret. To find the answer is to keep it. You'll believe it when you find something screaming across your mind. Green slime. What can it be? What is the reason? Is this the end to all the reason? Is it just something in your head? Will you believe it when you're dead?
dreams climb. Man has looked out to space in wonder for thousands of years, sometimes thinking that life could be somewhere. Is it just something in your head? Will you believe it when you're dead? Green slime, green slime, green slime, oh, green slime.
Would you believe it when you're dead? That's a theme from the 1968 film The Green Slime, sung by Richard Delvey, who certainly commits to it. He was a pioneer of surf music in the 60s, by the way, and a song possibly written by Charles Fox, although the music credits on that movie are all mixed up. It might have been written by someone calling themselves Sherry Gaydon. If it was written by Charles Fox, we have the delightful thought that the theme from Green Slime was composed by the same man who did Killing Me Softly with his song. According to one source, the electrotheremin inventor, Paul Tanner, we mentioned him earlier, is also playing on that track. That movie starred Robert Horton. As I mentioned, I used to occasionally get an email from a Wagon Train fan, or maybe a Green Slime fan, I don't know, wishing him well. I would steer them toward his website run by fans. We're going to close our show by heading toward the infinite with another track from that Czechoslovakian space picture, Ikari XB1, a cue I really like because it imagines party music from the future. This piece titled EVA Will Teach You, written by Jenek Liska, sounds like a bachelor pad beatnik dance party held on a spaceship, which is a place, frankly, I'd like to be. I'm Robert Horton, not the one from the green slime, and I thank you for listening to The Music and the Movies.
Thank you.